Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Good to be with you on a Wednesday, Payne and Pendergast. Chiefs, Texans, 3:30 Saturday. Seth and I've got you for Texans Countdown at 12:30. I'm pumped. We get to do this at least one more time, hopefully more. Spread is 9 right now. Spread is 9 on the game.
I'm going on Greg Rosenthal from the NFL Network. I'm going on his podcast later today because at the beginning of last week's appearance, he said, Seth, yeah, you're one of my favorite guests, and this will probably be the last time we talk to you this season.
Oh,
so, yeah. Oh, I took offense. I was offended.
Good,
Sean.
Good.
I demanded that he have me back. I don't know if he's going to even be recording this one. I think he's just scared of me.
He's just trying to get it out of the way. Like, all right.
He's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I got to have him back because he was really mad.
Yeah, yeah. He likes having you on there, huh?
Yeah. It goes back to the old around the NFL podcast.
Oh, that was him.
Yeah.
Okay. He's out on his own now, doing his own thing.
Well, he's with the NFL Network. The other guys are off on their own.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I have a hard time keeping track of who's still over at the NFL Network.
Yeah.
Been a lot of bloodshed over there.
I know. It's tough times for the league. They're not making much money, apparently.
Yeah.
They've had to cut a lot of people.
That's the big thing. Let's get through these playoffs, then we can figure out after the season how to go make money. Yeah.
James Palmer, you know, who I thought was like the only nugget hussy I respect is James Palmer.
Well, James?
Mostly because he's not really a nugget hussy. Ian Rappaport.
He's got a great gig now, James.
He's working for Underdog.
Yeah. He gets to go to these games, and he's making his videos and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's he's nice. Doing more. Like, because he was always... James Palmer is always way more intelligent and interesting, I think, to be pigeonholed into that 30-second delivering the news bite.
Yeah.
So now he actually gets to have conversations, and I like James Palmer.
He gets to pick the games he wants. I was talking to him when he was here for a game. He's like, yeah, it's really cool. Like, I kind of sets his own schedule. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Good for him. All right. What are the best things the Texans have going for them as they head to Kansas City? We'll get into the exact things on the team that they have going for them. Is this an advantage? The Kansas City Chiefs will have played 24 or will not have played football. It'll be 24 days since the last time they will have played a football game. Here's Chris Sims and McCourty number one on the Texans and the Chiefs and how the layoff might hurt the Chiefs.
The 3-week layoff bothers me about the Kansas City Chiefs. We saw the Texans be able to throw the short passing game. They got people that can play man-to-man, and we know their pass rushers are elite.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. When you have that kind of layoff like the Chiefs have had, being on the New England Patriots, we got the bye week a lot. And you come out of that bye week, it's all about how the game starts. So I think for Houston, you have to get off to a good start. They're going to be a little rusty. Kansas City, jump on them and jump on them early.
This lines up, man. And for the Texans, I know they didn't get off to a good start against the Chargers, but throughout the course of the season, the one thing that they've done well offensively is play well early in games.
Right. And you know what? And Bobby Slowick, like, I know the one that's most fresh in your mind is the lateral to Joe Mixon, where Joe Mixon ended up fumbling the ball. And people were angry at Bobby for trying to get clever. I get it. But there have been a lot of good moments where the only offense at times in the first half has been one of these gadget or trick plays. Go back to the Stephon Diggs touchdown versus Buffalo, right? Early in the year. They've got an ability to do that, to spring something like that. The rust factor, I think that it's one of those things that I think people almost look at it as disrespectful if you say, oh, this team's going to be rusty. No, they're the Chiefs. Yes. every team, I think, can succumb to it, no matter how good you are. Almost the more fine-tuned you are, I think you might be more susceptible to the rust showing up a little bit, because when your timing and everything else is part of what you do, yeah, it's a little bit different doing it at game speed.
I'll remind people that the Chiefs, coming off a bye 5 years ago against the Texans, did fall behind 24-0. Just saying. Like, they did.
Oh, coming off a bye in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, that's all you need to know about that.
That's it.
We've got some audio from C.J. Stroud talking about what it was like for him as a 16-year-old boy watching that
game. What are you doing? Why are you bringing this up? We'll get to that later. I think that part of this lines up well. Look, you always want to get the number one seed. There's no question about it. You want people to have to go through your stadium to get to the Super Bowl. But maybe an unintended consequence of all this, or an unintended negative, is the long layoff, especially considering the Chiefs rested everybody in week 18 of the season as well.
The other part about this, too, and I kind of just scoffed at this notion because it was asked multiple times, and now I realize it was actually a good question. Does it play... Is there anything, or have the players, coaches, or anything, is there any advantage to having played the Chiefs recently? And, you know, they did what you'd expect, say, like, well, no, we're just, you know, yes, we've had a look at them, but they've had a look at us, all of that. I do think that if you think about divisional games, that if there's one thing about divisional games, it's that, man, a lot of times the lesser teams put up way more of a fight versus the better team in the division just because of familiarity. Mm-hmm. The more familiar you get with one another, you can start to, the strengths aren't as strong. So I think I feel better about the Texans having played the Chiefs recently than if they had played them in week one.
Yeah.
I think if there's an advantage there, it helps the underdog more so than it helps the more dominant team.
I think just the familiarity of the process of going to the... Like, they played at... If I'm not mistaken, they may have played at noon that Saturday. I think they were the early... They played on a Saturday, probably staying at the same hotel, flying into the same gate. Like, the whole process, which took place less than a month ago, is the same. Like, I don't know. Like, when there's more familiarity with traveling and going places, I have way less anxiety about stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good, yeah, that's true. Like, when you're on a flight you take all the time, it's no big deal.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're transferring through an airport that you've never transferred through before, or what have you.
carry-ons over their shoulders running to the gate.
Texans, boy, they were saving money, so they booked one of those Southwest flights that takes you on seven different legs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Our boss booked us some flights for a trip that we're taking in a few weeks. Yeah. And I got the email, and I could see that the airline was Southwest. And when I first looked at it, I thought... I saw four flight segments. I was like, Parker, you SOB.
You
went cheap on me. And then I realized, like, oh, no, this is the departure and the return.
Yeah. So it was both flights on the same email. Yeah.
Yeah. I refollowed Parker on social media.
After that?
I had deleted Sports Radio 610 from my social media profiles. Yes, everything.
Yeah.
The disrespect. That's, now I get it.
Right.
Now I get what Deontay Johnson was feeling.
I thought you liked our show. All right. So that's number one. Number two, the things the Texans have going for them. I think this is the biggest one, and I'll combo this one. The fully unleashed pass rush combined with pick your poison in the secondary right now. Like, I think both Derek Stingley is playing at a level that I don't think we've seen a Texans cornerback play, maybe in the history of this franchise, with all due respect to Dante Robinson and Jonathan Joseph and others. Like, Derek Stingley Jr., none of those guys have ever been the best cornerback on the planet at a given time. Stingley might be right now.
Well, and especially, specifically because of his ball skills.
Yes.
I mean, as D'Amico said yesterday or on the coach's show, usually guys are playing defensive back partly because they can't catch the ball.
That's right.
And with Derek, it's no... Boy, he could totally play wide receiver if he wanted to. He's got better ball skills than a lot of receivers, and it's so much fun to watch. He's just such a master of his craft right now.
Do you think? Okay, well, let's play D'Amico, and then I've got a question for you about Stingley. But here's D'Amico talking about the combination of those two things we just talked about: the pressure and the coverage working together.
It's always both. both, right? When a DB is able to make a play on the football, like get the pressure, speed the quarterback up, or if we're sticky enough in coverage to make the quarterback hold the ball, are the D linemen, are they executing the right way? Did they take the proper steps to be exactly where they need to be to hit the quarterback? So there was a lot of, you know, rushing covers working together, which was definitely one of our biggest keys to victory, is playing discipline and coverage and having discipline rush. First off, not letting Justin get out of the pocket and escape. Thought the D-line did a great job of that. And then when they did get to the quarterback, a lot of times it wasn't interceptions, but guys were attacking the throwing arm, right? Mm. That was very impressive. A lot of incomplete passes were really made by the defensive line because they didn't allow Justin to follow through with his throws.
And I thought when you talk about both of those phases complementing each other, I thought the best example of that in the game was it was either third and short or fourth and short. It was third and short, and Kamari Lassiter broke up a pass. But on that play, Danielle Hunter had gotten to Herbert and was his hand was just about to hit Herbert's hand as the ball came out. Ended up being a good pass, but it was enough of a disruption that Kamari Lassiter, who was in perfect position, both secured the tackle and broke the pass. I can't even remember if he broke the pass up or not. But it was short of the line to gain. And we saw that multiple times. You've got these cornerbacks who are really good at playing man, but especially when you decide to send five or six pass rushers, the pass rush better get there, because you can only cover those guys for so long. And that was what was happening in the second half, especially. When they chose the blitz, they were getting home. When they didn't blitz, you were getting a good four-man pass rush. It was really, really nice to see. It was a masterful defensive performance on the individual player level in a lot of ways.
They were really good, Daniil and Will, especially when Will actually got to Herbert's arm a couple times. But they, like, the two of them, man, are so good at even plays where they don't flat out beat their guy.
Yeah.
Like just like doing something to disrupt the rhythm of the quarterback in that game was really, really good.
I think that's the thing that I really like about this defense. And going back to the beginning of the year, even when the sack production wasn't necessarily always there, they're much more disciplined. There have been other defensive lines that have had like a lot of talent or more talent, whatever it might be, previously, where guys would just, they would run past the quarterback too easily. It was almost like they're going to take their shot, and if they didn't get it, they were just going to get washed by. And they might just kind of stick their arm in as they're going by. You don't see that with these guys. They're trying to attack the pocket from the right angles, and they do a really good job of getting their hand on the throwing arm, which that's a lot of work. You know, that's a lot of drill work and everything to get to that to the point where it's just natural and you do it without thinking about it.
My question that I was going to ask you, or just I guess just share a thought and see what you think about it, before we played that audio from D'Amico, because you were talking about Stingley. Stingley might have the best hands on the team, and he plays cornerback.
Yeah.
Do you think that, especially given where they are right now with the depth at wide receiver or lack thereof, do you think there's a Stingley package in there at all? I'm not saying one that they would unleash this weekend necessarily, but
I it's weird.
Would you have a Stingley package?
I have no appetite for it right now. When you asked that, I was like, oh, please don't. No, they need to get the vanilla stuff right. I think that they need to lean into their strengths. Stingley's got to spend all of his time and energy on the defensive side of the ball. This offense right now, I've got no mood for them spending any amount of time in practice on bells and whistles other than like the normal little wrinkles or the trick play that you put in every week or anything like that. I've got no appetite for it.
That's fair.
Yes, I could see maybe next year, but I just, that's not what I want them to be working on.
I'm totally
right now.
Spitballing. Your answer is a good one. I just think
maybe I'll be proven a complete and total hypocrite when sometime during the game on Saturday, I'm like, I've been waiting for this all year.
Or even just
using Stingley as a receiver. Yes.
Maybe even line him up out there to give him something to think about. Like he just does
something to think about.
Like a decoy. Oh. Like a decoy.
Yeah, the old something to think about.
Right.
I like that.
Right. All right. So the layoff that Kansas City's had, the fully unleashed connection, the synergy, the connective tissue between the pass rush and the secondary right now looked phenomenal on Saturday. Number three, Aziz is back. Here is D'Amico Ryans earlier this week And Aziz didn't play in that first Chiefs game. We know that. He's back for this game, we think. Didn't practice yesterday. Here's D'Amico on Aziz Alshire.
Aziz has been a great vocal leader. He always shares a great message. He's great at articulating those messages to the players, and the players are very attentive when Aziz is talking. Right? When Aziz talks to the team, it always comes from the heart. It's heartfelt, it's sincere, and you can tell how much he cares about the guys just with his messages. So I know it resonates with the guys, and that's what a team is about, right? When your team leaders are standing up giving the messages, they go a lot further than what I have to say because they know my messages don't change. It's the same thing from when we started at training camp to now. Like, we're going to be consistent in messaging from me and what I expect of our guys, because I believe in winning. It takes a certain way to win games, and that doesn't change right from day one to where we are now. So really thankful for Aziz and his leadership. Thankful for CJ, Will, the guys who step up and lead when it comes to being vocal leaders. Like, you need that. You need guys to do it the right way, but at times players need to hear from each other, and it means a lot more when they do that. So we have a lot of guys who aren't afraid to speak up and speak their mind to each other and pour out their hearts to each other.
I think, yeah, and especially, you know, and no matter who your coach is, and as your coach gets older and older and further removed from the actual players, they're not going to identify with him as much. Like, it's just, no matter who it is, you know, like, there's a, so when it comes to a guy that's, Aziz Alshire is not even that old, but he's just so mature in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's also, he's been through a lot of things that other guys on the team have been through in terms of, you know, Aziz had a lot of challenges growing up. He had some rough living situations, but also just as the way Aziz is wired as a player, like, he's got that incredible passion for the game and everything, but y'all's got to learn how to channel all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Aziz, other than, you know, a little bit of line stepping here and there over the line, like, he's managing all that. And I think it just, it resonates with people.
Yeah.
He's faced a lot of challenges in his life. And I don't think, whenever I've heard talk about him, he's never trying to beat his chest and say, look at what I overcame. I think it just gives him an empathy for other guys who have challenges too.
Yep.
And he's probably got a great future as a motivational speaker. He's got to win a Super Bowl, though. He's not a big enough name to really put over there. Once you win the Super Bowl, then all of a sudden it looks really good on the book cover and everything.
Got to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And you got to somehow, and hopefully that washes the image of Trevor Lawrence splattered on the turf out of
people's
mind.
No, I would put that on the book cover, too.
You would put that on the book cover? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I would.
He needs to go back and delete the tweet where he put the picture of the Joker up and embrace being the villain, though. It's hard.
No, I'd put that on the inside of the dust jacket.
That would? Yeah. That'd be the foreword there?
Yeah.
All right, so the good things the Texans are bringing to Kansas City, so far all defensive. Now we get into the ones that we can debate and discuss a little bit. These are all things that have showed up Saturday, or in the case of at least one, have shown up throughout the year. Is C.J. Stroud, the 2023 version, reactivated? Optimus Stroud, is he reactivated? Here was C.J., and we know C.J., after that Hutchinson play, was outstanding for the rest of the game with his arm and his legs. Here was C.J. I thought this was a really interesting cut. The genesis of that 27-yard run,
yeah,
that set up that field goal may have come from something he saw on the iPad after throwing the interception he threw in the game.
Not really. You know, they kind of shown those looks throughout the week. It was one third down, actually, the one I threw the interception on. I looked and I was like, dang, like, there's a wide open, there's nobody accounting for me, you know, and I looked at it on the iPad, and, you know, that's learning moments right there. I'm still learning, you know, like, you know, year two for me, I think I'm ahead of a lot of things, but I'm definitely not perfect. I don't think I ever will be. So I'm always willing to learn, make mistakes, and learn from them. So I'm glad I was able to learn from that and see that look and, you know, take it off from there. So, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of that goes back to just what we've talked about. You're facing a quarterback this week in Pat Mahomes who's masterful in understanding when the opportunities are there to run. D'Amico made a really good point on the coach's show about how the thing that makes Mahomes unique and when he does scramble, a lot of times he's hitting it right up the B gap. You know, he's he's going up the middle, so immediately you're getting positive yardage. That it's that he understands when that opportunity is there, especially if the play's been extended a little bit. And I think most quarterbacks have a tendency to drift in the pocket a little bit. Well, then you've created a half field situation, and it's a lot easier for guys to come up. You go across, and it takes longer to get there too. He just hits it right up the middle. And it's 5 yards no matter what.
Yeah.
So that's on the defensive side, obviously, you got to be aware of that. But I think as an example for CJ, it's Pat Mahomes is regarded as the best passer of this generation. Nobody is questioning whether or not he's an elite pocket passer just because he runs every now and then. It's in the modern NFL, that is an integral part of being an elite passer, is knowing when to take advantage of the running. Because then what happens? Okay, if the Chargers had seen more of CJ running throughout the season, yeah, maybe they would have had a spy on him, which opens things up in the passing game. Like, it's a tool at your disposal that helps you in the passing game as well as in the present moment if you just take the easy yardage and run when you can run.
What's your confidence level in CJ carrying over the second half of the Charger game into the Chiefs game this weekend?
Okay, part of it is based on, I think, Bobby Slowick doing a better job of attacking the short areas, getting Nico Collins involved in the short passing game, but not on screens. You know, it felt like for a while, it was like, well, okay, we'll either throw screens to Nico or deep balls. That's how we're going to attack the entire field.
And we should point out that Chiefs game on December 21st was the game that Bobby called the four screens that wound up for -9 yards in that game.
Right, yeah.
Kept pounding the screen button.
They're not good at running screens.
Right.
And I think the tough thing with screens is the allure is that it seems like it should be the easiest thing in the world. When you're going against good defenses, you have to be really, really dialed in on all the finer aspects and the details, because the thing about a screen is it takes a little while to develop, and there are so many different tells that if you tip your hand, then it's too easy to get out there and cover it. And I think right now the Texans, or at least during the season, they were not operating nearly with as much attention to detail. They were not executing well enough to run those screens. The other part of it, too, is because they weren't running the ball well, linebackers have felt very comfortable just kind of sitting back and letting the game come to them. And when you're sitting back at 7 yards, it's a lot easier to diagnose the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Than if your sphincter's all tightened because you're worried about the run or anything else like that.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
Or again, because you're not really using a lot of crossers and everything and really like threatening the linebackers in coverage over the middle, they're not as stressed out about it.
Yeah.
So much of this offense, when executed properly, the biggest thing is you want to put stress. You want to stress out the defense mentally. You want them to feel like, oh, crap, they could run this, or they could run this other play that looks exactly like when they're running this. And they just, in the regular season, they weren't able to do that. Simply running the ball can help a lot in that regard.
All right, so CJ, is he the old CJ again? We'll see. Nico Collins, I think this is the one thing, like, this shows up every week. Nico Collins is a monster. Here was Nick Caserio earlier this week on Texans All Access on the Nico Collins, CJ Stroud chemistry.
Yeah, I mean, those are two really good football players. So anytime those two players are involved offensively, good things are probably going to happen. So the concept on the play was pretty good. CJ made a really good throw, made a quick decision. Nico was able to win off the line of scrimmage there right from the snap. So it's all about timing and execution. If you wait a little bit longer or if he gets knocked off the route, maybe that play doesn't work out the way that it did. But those are two players that have made plays going back to the first week of the regular season in the Indy game. We saw multiple examples where he basically threw a jump ball up there in double coverage and then the third down throw to finish the game. So Nico's been a big part of the offense really over the past couple seasons. So he made a lot of plays that helped us win.
They're going to need a huge game from Nico Collins. I think that goes without saying. They're going to need a game like he had on Saturday.
It was way more dramatic than the way Nick had presented it. It was, the Night King had an army of White Walkers. They moved beyond the wall. Mm-hmm. We sent a couple dragons up. It didn't work out quite the way we planned.
Right,
and then, but it's all about how you respond in situations.
Arya Stark's a good player. You just tip your hat to a good player like that. She's a good warrior, really good with a knife, and she was able to kill the Night King.
Yeah, and you don't want to sit there and bask in it too long. We got another challenge coming up at some point. We got to sell these. novels and come up with another. We know it takes a long time for George R.R. Martin to come out with these things, so we'll see what happens.
We beat the Night King. We don't have a whole lot of time. We got to turn around and beat the Lannisters and take back King's Landing.
Right. I don't know. You're kind of out of source material. We'll go back and maybe do a prequel next. Yeah.
We'll go
back in time and look. We'll check the tape. We'll check the tape and see how all of this started.
Nico versus McDuffie will be McDuffie travels. You know, their cornerback. That's an easy one. Like, he's going to travel with Nico and may the best man win.
Well, in a lot of the Chargers, man, their safeties really let them down in the game. For one, Nico on that 99-yard drive, the touchdown, you can see what's his name, Fulton, the cornerback, looking back with his arms up at the free safety after that touchdown. Like, dude, you had one thing to worry about. We talked about this all week. It's Nico Collins. Why did you lose track of Nico Collins in the red zone? Because Fulton had outside leverage. He's pushing him back, and the safety is just, I don't know what he was thinking. He just wasn't thinking about Nico Collins. So this is a better. I know the Chargers are the number one scoring defense. I know the Chiefs defensively haven't been as impressive as they've been in the past. It's a very, very well coached unit, and it's a challenge. They're not going to be able to. You can't expect necessarily that they're going to be able to exploit mistakes in the secondary the way they could last week.
Mm-hmm. Last thing, as far as things they're bringing to Kansas City that we're hopeful about, the final drive for the Texans was 14 plays, 74 yards, 13 run plays. The only pass play was the very first play of the drive. It was a short pass to Cade Stover, which may as well have been a run play. It was a 5-yard little dump pass. Joe Mixon had 12 carries for 60 yards on that drive and finished it off with this.
Fourth and one at the 17-yard line of the Chargers. CJ hands off to Mixon, running left, has the 15, 10, Mixon across the 5, Mixon to the pylon, Mixon to the end zone! Celebrate Mixon on fourth down. Pay dirt!
Nico,
yeah,
that's a good call. Like, Nico is non-negotiable. You need a big game from Nico. If they bring the run game to Kansas City that they had in the second half of that game, they're going to win this football game. If they got Nico and that going on, and the defense just plays a normal Texans defensive game, it could be a really, really fun Saturday night here in Houston, man.
It's look, I know it's funny how San Francisco has the kind of year they had this year, and you stop kind of. We haven't referenced them nearly as much as we did last year when it comes to trying to do the same things offensively or what have
you. Good point, yep.
But with the 49ers, and I still, they're two defensive coordinators removed from D'Amico's defense in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But for whatever it's worth, a lot of the personnel are the same. One of Mahomes' worst individual performances this year was versus the 49ers. Now, they won, the Chiefs won that game. But I you talk about, okay, how can you emulate the best version of the 49ers? Run the football, obviously. And that sets everything else up. Defensively, can you get the same performance out of Pat Mahomes as the 49ers did earlier this year? Where, again, just like the Chiefs did all year long, they had complete team victories. It wasn't just about Pat Mahomes. But it sure does help if you get a bad performance or a lackluster performance out of Pat Mahomes.
Yep. Text message, people texting in on all this. Old-fashioned pep rally at NRG Stadium on Friday. Please don't anybody bring Letterman jackets. They sell some pretty badass Letterman jackets in the team store now. I think,
I saw there's a Chargers fan who had on a really cool Chargers jacket. I asked him about it. It was cool because I was trying to figure out whether this cross. It wasn't a Letterman jacket, but it had Letterman jacket elements to it, mm-hmm. like the font and some of that stuff. I feel like you could get away with that. I think it was the logo of the company says Pro with like a line across it, okay. Whatever company it is. He said you could find other team versions of it.
Text message, top three things Texans have going for them against Kansas City. Number one, they're the underdogs. Number two, CJ has his swagger back. Number three, the offensive line has, quote, seen the shot go through the bucket, end quote.
Okay.
So in other
they
words,
got a layup. They gotta just get some layups.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just your shot's not working. Get some layups.
Well, I think that is the good thing about the way they played against the Chargers. That it wasn't a game where you like that the final score wasn't like 14-6 and you needed short fields to get there. You know, like they.
Yeah.
It wasn't a perfect performance by any means offensively, but you at least have a second half where you saw significant elements of things. You saw yourself do things that you're going to need this Saturday in Kansas City.
When it was 6-0 in the second quarter, I thought to myself, all right, you know, the Texans are still in this game. The defense, once you wash the taste of that first drive out of your mouth, you realize that, wow, okay, the defense is playing really, really well. It's that it's going to have to be that kind of a victory, like a 13-6 win where you score on defense or something like that. So I had not abandoned hope. I had abandoned hope in terms of it being a complete game. So that was the most encouraging thing about it, was that you get to the end of the game and you realize, man, they did it on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. All right, this is a version of the Texans that we have not seen much of at all this season, that sometimes teams do just click in the playoffs. That was, I don't want to make more of it than potentially what it is, but it does happen. You know, there are teams that just kind of figure it out and they get hot in the postseason. And that one game really felt like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Justin Herbert had thrown 3 interceptions all season long.
Yep.
And they turned him to mud. That Kamari Lassiter interception, I don't know what on earth Justin Herbert was thinking there.
I don't either.
Like, I mean, for a guy that's so careful with a football, he threw across the field to an extreme degree on the run to a guy who had 2 defenders on him. It was so stupid.
Yeah.
It was just so incredibly dumb. But I credit the Texans defense for putting him into that mindset for a guy that had not done anything like that all year long.
Yeah.
I went back and I watched his previous interceptions, and they were poor decisions, but 2 of them were poor decisions, mm-hmm. or at least they were risky throws, mm-hmm. but nothing like that.
Yeah.
Not even close to anything like that.
Yeah. That was, and it was a great play by Lassiter on the ball to come up with the catch, you know, because Quentin Johnston was kind of pawing at him while he was going up for it. And then the other 3, the Eric Murray one, he just sailed over the guy's head. Murray, and I saw some clips. I read DJ Bieniemy had a piece on ESPN.com that dropped yesterday that talked a ton about D'Amico's game plan for that game on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And that play, without getting way too deep in the details, they were in Murray was in a different position than he's been used most of the time on that play.
Yeah.
And it just worked out, and Herbert sailed the ball, and it's a pick 6. And then the other 2, you know, Disley probably sold out Herbert on the one that went through his hands right into Stingley's hands. And then the last one was just Stingley being Stingley, man.
Well, like, Stingley kind of almost baited
him,
you know, because he's so comfortable. There's so many times where he wasn't baiting necessarily. It's that he understands his envelope better than most defensive backs. So it was kind of like, I don't think he was baiting. It's that he knows what he can get away with, mm-hmm. and he took a step to the inside, but understand that because of the guy he was covering, that he was still in complete control there.
Yeah.
And like any kind of errant throw, Stingley's going to make the play on the ball.
He's just that. Literally, as we're talking about this, that pick is on TV in our studio right now. That's wild. Because they're debating, are you convinced? The segment is they're doing, are you convinced Justin Herbert is an elite quarterback? Not in the playoffs, he's not.
No, and now he's had 2 really bad performances in the playoffs. That's part of it too.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. When coughing up a 27-0 lead in a playoff game is not your worst playoff performance, and you've only been in the playoffs twice. Like that's
yeah.
That's bad. Because I think he was awful on Saturday, like terrible. At least he put up 27 in that Jags game. Payne and Pendergast with you. Obviously, we're going to keep digging into this game more this week. Mike Vrabel is the new head coach in New England. He was doing a lot of radio work the last couple days up there. My guess is there's a lot of bridges that need to be rebuilt between the Patriots and their fan base up there.
Oh, yeah.
He was on our sister station, WEEI, on one of their shows. I forget which show it was. But they got a call while Vrabel was in studio from Bill on a mobile.
A special guest on the line.
Oh, we do?
Yeah. That Billy in the car that wanted to celebrate.
Billy in the car. All right. Well, let's go to him. Let's go to Billy from Chestnut Hill. Hey, Billy.
Hey, first time caller, long time
listener. It is Andova. Bill O'Brien.
Andova. Let's go Patriots. How we doing, guys?
You got any players up there yet, Billy? We find any players?
We do, man. Are you gonna? Hey, man, you gotta come come to our pro day, come speak to our team. I mean, I've already put my dibs in on that. So, I'm excited for Mike. I'm excited for the Patriots, and it's going to be awesome. No question.
You know, I could tell you some stories about working for Billy O. They call him the teapot. He'd go off, and then 30 seconds later, he'd be like, "What's wrong with you guys? Why are you looking at me?" I'm like, "Billy, you just cussed out every one of us for 30 seconds, and now you're looking at it. It's like, what's wrong?" So the teapot would just boil over, and then he was fine.
Yeah, that's as somebody that's, you know, Sean, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've gotten angry myself times in my life. One of the biggest things, I got to talk to Bill O'Brien at some point about, there's one thing about people that get super, super angry and are volatile. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they genuinely don't understand the effect that it has on people. And because they can move beyond angry moments more quickly, it's like if you grew up in a household where there's a lot of yelling and screaming and then everything is just fine 3 minutes later.
Yeah.
They really don't understand the effect that it has on people. And I feel like Bill O'Brien is, I don't know if he's, maybe he has learned that lesson. I don't know. Vrabel worked as an assistant coach for Bill O'Brien. It's not like he stopped calling him Billy Teapot.
No.
I do like that Vrabel immediately turned it to Bill O'Brien. He asked, "Oh, hey, are you got any players up there yet?" All that. You know, like it wasn't like, "Oh, yeah, look at me. I'm basking in the glory. I'm the big time head coach.
Yeah.
I've got the job that you wanted, probably."
Probably. I didn't even think of that. I was thinking when he asked that, because I think Vrabel's kid either goes or went to Boston College
and played
there. So he's probably got an affinity for Boston College already. Yeah. So that's what popped into my head. Hey, did you, I think I texted you, Ted Johnson, for those who don't know, people remember Ted here. Ted, starting in a week, is going to be doing afternoons on our sister station, WEEI, up in Boston.
Oh.
So he's back to doing
He works for us now.
Monday through Friday. He's a coworker again. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
we'll
that's...
have to take advantage of that.
I was happy for Ted, man.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
He's been doing great up there. But yeah. It was good for him to move back up to there, New England, and he's been killing it on TV.
Yes.
And now he's probably just adding this to the plate.
Yeah, he is. Well, it's like the triple threat was. It'll be Monday through Friday. He's on with two other hosts, so it's a 3-man show. So it shouldn't feel too foreign to him. And obviously, you know, Patriot fans love Ted Johnson up there. So congrats to Teddy J. Welcome back into the Odyssey fold, buddy. All right, J.J. Watt. Is J.J. Watt giving T.J. Watt any career advice right now? We will explain. We will explain coming up next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
All right, this is interesting. We'll get to TJ Watt here in just a second and talking about his future in Pittsburgh. Adam Schefter just tweeted this out moments ago. They announced a host team for another international game, and it is an AFC South team.
Who is it? It is
not the Houston Texans. It is the Indianapolis Colts, and they are hosting a game in Berlin, Germany.
Ooh, that would be a fun one. That's a good one we're going to go to and get a sponsor for. I don't know if Deutsche Bank has an office in Houston or not, but I have been a customer of yours for a long time.
Right,
at your branch there on Alameda or wherever. Yeah,
we'll do the pregame show live from a Deutsche Bank branch.
Yes,
across from the stadium. So the Colts. So that's the Colts, and obviously the Jags are hosting their annual London game over there. So that's that's two. The other two teams that have been announced so far are the Jets and the Browns, both hosting a London game. Neither of them are on the Texans' schedule next year. Mm-hmm. But obviously the Colts and the Jags are. So I'm rooting for an international game next year.
I look forward to just multitudes of Houstonians going to a game in Germany and all of us complaining to them about the quality of their Tex-Mex.
Yes, their barbecue.
Yes, yeah. And their lack of lemonade.
Yeah.
That's what... What's his name there, did?
who complained about the lack of
the
lemonade?
Receiver from the Panthers.
Xavier Leggett.
Xavier Leggett. Right. Couldn't believe he was incredulous that they don't have lemonade in Germany.
They didn't have any lemonade over there.
It's just funny. That's a classic 22-year-old kid thing.
Oh, my God.
Like, you don't even, not kid, but you know, like just like, it doesn't even occur to you that there would be countries that don't have lemonade all over the place.
You know, yeah. You know what's funny? So I'm looking at the graphic for this that the Colts put out, and it's a graphic that has, on the bottom half of the graphic, it's an overhead shot of the stadium with big letters saying Berlin, and then a Colts logo above that. And then the upper half of the graphic is a graphic with three players standing there in kind of that three-person pose where one's in the middle holding his, you know, holding his jersey up near the neck, and the other two are sort of flanked on the side of him there. The player they've got as the front player on there is Quentin Nelson, who's an outstanding player. You know, he's been a Pro Bowler every year. But I feel like if your team is putting your left guard as the... No disrespect to left guards out there, but if your team is putting your left guard out there as your front-facing player, you're probably a 7-win team. You know, like if it's not your quarterback or some maniac coming off the edge like a TJ Watt who we're about to talk about here, like if it's your left guard... I feel like I could almost predict the record. I feel like blindly, without even knowing, I could get within a game of the record of the teams based on the three guys they put in graphics.
This isn't like something that they're using for season tickets or something where it's just Colts fans. You're trying to sell this to the world.
Yeah.
I will say, the Germans really appreciated NFL Europe.
Yeah.
And it almost turned into basically NFL Germany at one point because it was so popular in so many of those cities. Which city is it in?
It's in Berlin.
Berlin, okay. Yeah. I would worry if I were the... at some point, Anthony Richardson's going to try to parkour something off of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
And it's like, I would be really nervous about Anthony Richardson traveling internationally. the kid's got no sense, Sean. He's so injury prone.
Well,
and there's so many ways to get injured in Germany.
What are the odds he would forget his passport? Like, they'd all get to the airport and...
Oh, they take care of that for you.
They do? Okay,
Yeah, there's a dude that's in charge of the passports.
Yeah. TJ Watt in Pittsburgh is having to fend off trade request rumors. There's, you know, TJ's been there now since 2017. He's heading into his ninth season next year. Here was TJ Watt talking after the Steelers lost to the Ravens this past weekend about his future in Pittsburgh.
I want to be in Pittsburgh City. You guys know that. I don't want to leave this place, especially in this. I want to be part of the solution. I've put so much into it here. I've seen so many guys. I mean, I want to help Cam Hayward get to where we need to get. I want to be a part of the solution. I don't want to leave this place. I love the people here. and that goes beyond just the coaches. It's the fan base. It's the people, the community, and we owe it to them to get it right. And I want to be part of the solution, not leave here and go somewhere else. That's not my intention at all.
Okay, so we should point out, T.J. Watt has had a very, very similar career path to J.J. in some ways. I mean, both defensive players of the year.
Yeah,
you know, J.J.'s a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think T.J. Watt's on that track to be a Hall of Famer. I don't think his body of work is probably a notch below J.J.'s, but T.J. stayed healthy the whole time. The biggest thing is they've both played for teams that struggled to make an impact in the postseason, and T.J., it's been even worse. He's never even walked off the field victorious in a postseason game. J.J. at least got to do that a few times.
He hasn't won a game yet.
The last playoff game they won in Pittsburgh was in 2016. They drafted T.J. Watt the next spring. So he's not even won a playoff game there yet. I mean, I admire the whole thing of him wanting to be there. I just wonder, I wonder what J.J.'s saying to T.J. about that, you know, about...
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, I know there's it's dangerous to go, you know, ring hopping or looking for a ring, because it's really hard to handicap other than, you know, if going to the Chiefs or a few specific destinations where you feel like, okay, this is my best shot.
Yeah.
That can be dicey. And I wonder, there's something in the value of just being a Steeler and the fact that what that franchise is, but are they becoming a franchise whose current legacy, or at least recent legacy, is, hey, they're competitive in the regular season, but that's about it. Can't expect much more. That's probably frustrating for somebody that wants to do bigger and better things.
Yeah, I think that's what they are right now. You know, like, there's talk of Mike Tomlin's future there, and he's never had a losing season there in 18 years.
Now, when you say he has to fight off rumors, or do you mean like he has to fight off questions about it or speculation about it? Okay, there's not like any actual reporting out there that he's requested a trade or anything.
No, nothing close to that degree where he's requested a trade. I think it's just people. I think people are wondering. He's 8 years in now. He hasn't won a playoff game. I don't think. Look. There, until they solve the quarterback position, they're not going to be taken seriously as a Super Bowl contender. I think the Texans are a far more serious Super Bowl contender in the next 3 years, let's say, than the Pittsburgh Steelers are.
Yeah.
You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the thing you can count on them is going over their season win total every year, because it'll be 8, 8.5, and they'll win 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Like, you can set your watch to it, but I don't know. If I'm T.J. Watt and one of my goals is to win a Super Bowl, I'm not feeling it in Pittsburgh if that's my goal. But you bring up a great point. Like, there are probably a half a dozen franchises where there is mere value in being a lifelong whatever the team is, you know.
Yeah,
and the Steelers are one of them, no question about it. No.
Yeah, and I think looking at JJ versus TJ in terms of career stats, JJ played 151 games. TJ Watt has played 121, so 30 fewer games than JJ.
Yeah.
But TJ is only 8.5 sacks behind JJ on the career sack numbers. The biggest difference is that JJ had that run of 3 defensive players of the year in 4 years, and he was just so far head and shoulders above anybody else at that point that matters a lot in terms of just being a shoe-in in the Hall of Fame. He had 3 defensive players of the year. TJ, as of right now, has had 1, and we'll see who gets it this year. But TJ has just never been as, at least openly, publicity hungry. They seem like they're wired a little bit differently. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's going to agitate for a trade.
No. Well, I mean, agitate for a trade, or his contract's up after this year. You know, does he play out his deal and go sign somewhere in 2026?
He also does not have Jack Easterby in the organization. Ultimately, I think that was the part of JJ being cool with being traded or being released. I think a lot of that had to do with just how miserable it was. I mean, you know, not making the playoffs is a whole different than winning 2 games and just feeling like it's a dysfunctional nightmare.
And I guess we should point out, like, as I'm sitting here, the one wondering, like, I wonder if JJ is giving TJ any advice on, boy, you want to go play for a Super Bowl kid, you know, this or that. JJ did leave here and go sign with the Cardinals.
You know, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like you went to the Packers at the time, were a 13-win team, or in his home state, or the Chiefs, as you said earlier. You know? So, Let TJ become a free agent, come to Houston, and fulfill the destiny of his brother here.
I think with TJ, if I were somebody in the, if I were a Steelers fan trying to convince TJ to get in it for the long haul, I might bring up Freddie Freeman, who kind of stuck around for the Braves and their turnaround. They identified him as the one guy, but that was also with kind of a change in culture, and then Freddie Freeman was on board for it. I don't know
what
the change in culture for the Steelers would be necessarily, other than like, hey, we'll find you a quarterback. I promise.
And if he were to leave, he is by far their most popular player right now. And I'm going solely on the jersey count at the game Amy and I went to a month ago.
Yeah.
Like, it was TJ Watt overwhelmingly, and that includes all like the Steel Curtain Steelers and the Big Ben era Steelers. Like, TJ Watt, number 90, by far the most. He's royalty there, man, no question.
You know what I had a hard time with the Chargers? Because we were looking at all the various jerseys coming in. Seemed like the historical player was probably LaDainian Tomlinson, the most jerseys we saw. When they wear anything like a yellow uniform like they did versus the Texans, and now that they're in L.A., I accidentally called them the Rams no fewer than like 24 times.
You did
it.
It felt
like the Texans were playing the Rams.
Yeah.
I don't know. You got to lean into the blue, that your particular color of blue more than the yellow now that you're in L.A.
Yes, the powder blue. All right, into the 8 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you. C.J. Stroud had a funny cut yesterday. Is C.J. a fan of something the team has done a couple of times this year now? The answer he had yesterday would seem to indicate no. We will let you know what that is coming up next.